Hello, everybody. I'm Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 63 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Alex McGregor Counts His Blessings, about my two-part interview with the former president and the current chairman of the McGregor Company, Alex McGregor. I've known McGregor for 30 years in the way you know someone who knows you. In my life as a reporter for Capital Press, the Northwest's premier agricultural weekly, I interviewed him occasionally about issues of the day, but it was during his tenure as an officer of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers in the 1996 to 1999 time frame that we talked quite a bit. McGregor's ascension to the president of the Growers Organization in 1998 and the eruption of what may be the biggest issue to face the group in the last 20 years occurred simultaneously. I'm referring here to the debate over wheat stubble field burning. Environmentalists wanted to curtail the practice dramatically or end it outright. For a time, WAG's strategy included hiring a Washington, D.C. lawyer to fight the effort, and they don't come cheap. Although my relationship with McGregor was all business, I could always trust what he said and didn't worry about toning down his comments. Unlike others on both sides of the bitter partisan divide, McGregor successfully represented WAG's position, but he did it without impugning the motivations of the other side. In other words, I thought he was a class act. I could go into detail here about the twists and turns of negotiating with the environmental group, but the wound has healed nicely, and why go poking at it? In fact, it's such a non-issue that nearly 20 years later, I only realized after my interview that I failed to ask McGregor a single question about that divisive time. To be completely honest, back in the day as a young reporter, Alex McGregor intimidated me. Although he's not much older than me, being the scion, as it were, of a pioneer sheep-herding family that persevered through hard times to create a large regional agrochemical company, was enough to make little old me self-conscious. But that's not all. Before he was president of the company, he was a college professor and an historian who actually published books. His most widely read, Counting Sheep, was chosen as one of the top 100 centennial books written since Washington became a state. In my world of writing, that merits a big wow and goes to the title of this podcast, Alex McGregor Counts His Blessings, which is intended as a kind of homage. To top it all off, McGregor has a baritone voice that just naturally sounds a lot like preaching. I went down to visit McGregor at his company's office outside of Colfax on December 20th. We sat down in the barley conference room, which is near the larger wheat conference room. McGregor and I talked for more than an hour, so yes, I am making my interview with him a two-parter. For those who may not know the story of the McGregor family, it starts with brothers Archie, Peter, and John McGregor, born in Ontario, Canada, from parents who immigrated from Scotland, arriving in Whitman County in the summer of 1882 to look for good sheep country, which they found near Hooper, Washington. 74 years later, in 1956, the McGregor Company was incorporated as a separate business. Alex McGregor took over the presidency of the McGregor Company in the late 1980s from his father, Sherman. Transitions are a part of any family business, and McGregor said the company's most recent transfer of power occurred during the summer of 2017.
We go through transitions as an organization, have been doing so for a very long time. Back in the early 80s, I was one of the young Turks coming in and taking measure, learning on the go from my dad and two or three of the other pioneers in our business. These days, we continue that process. My son Ian has been a part of this business for 18 years, started as an unpaid painter, welder, and cowboy, and wrote when he was putting together a junior high paper about coming on board as a 10-year-old unpaid helper, and said, "I felt like electricity in a wire. We were all working toward the same goals." he's been on board for a long time and has shown a lot of skill. He's got a lot of analytical skill, great talent in the world of information systems, talent that quickly eclipsed his dad's. And he has taken over the years a series of responsibilities for service centers, for finance, for safety and other areas, and has served as vice president. After 18 years on board, it's time for him to take the lead as president. We made that change this summer. I'm serving as chairman, which allows me to continue to provide oversight and leadership, but to spend more of my time doing the things I've wanted to for a long time, spending time out in the field with growers and spending time at our branches with our people. Plus, working with a passion on issues that matter for farm families. Having just been to D.C. 2 weeks ago doing that, I'm excited now about the Farm Bill and how we're going to win the battle. You and I've been around through many of those endeavors over the years. We got a great story to tell, and I want to keep telling it. So I'm not slowing down. In fact, the pace has been more hectic than ever, and I like that. But I'm glad to see my son taking on a daily leadership role. He's earned that opportunity. He does very well. He's earned the support of our people, and I think that's splendid for the future.
You were a college professor before you came back to the company. Was there ever any consideration of you continuing in that profession rather than returning to McGregor's?
I had an opportunity in graduate school and as a professor to learn about agriculture and its heritage, to go out and interview many veteran farm and ranch people. It strengthened my passion and love for agriculture. So that got me interested in coming back, which I'd always planned on doing anyway. And then getting to know our customers, getting to know the people on board with us in all sorts of different roles. Remarkable people. So I didn't anticipate staying in that, but I do continue to write and speak about how far we've come as agriculture, about our agricultural heritage, with a couple of friends, a fellow who's a retired professor at Seattle Pacific, Dick Shireman, but who grew up in Endicott in St. John, and a photographer from the Tri-Cities, John Clement, the three amigos we call ourselves. We write about the history of this land and the remarkable people. I joke that our royalties put us in the triple digits every year, meaning over $100. And this last year, it was particularly lucrative. I think we surpassed $200. But we don't do it for that. We do it to tell the story of remarkable farm families. With a book that WSU Press published in 2013 called Harvest Heritage, we took a look at wheat production and how it's changed from the days of the Hudson's Bay forts to today, a pretty broad brush. So I'm continuing to tell the story. And I use that history background, unusual as it is, to help people get a sense of how much progress we've made. I use it as in the recent trip to D.C. to talk about how there are challenges ahead for agriculture, but we have made such great strides and we'll make great strides moving forward.
I'm curious, did your training as an historian have an impact on the way that you conducted the business of the McGregor Company for the 28 years you were president?
It did have an impact. I remember being shocked as a professor about how students in my Pacific Northwest history classes would have a sense that agriculture used to be simple and in harmony with nature, but that somehow we'd fallen off a precipice into environmental degradation and absentee corporations. And I thought, that's not the case. That is flat out wrong, and I'm going to help people understand the real story. So, yeah, it made me passionate about telling that story. And I think it's important as agriculture to tell our story in a positive way. We have no need to be defensive. We have a great story to tell. We practice environmental stewardship every single day out in the field in the real world, not from 1,000 miles away. As President Eisenhower once said, farming looks mighty simple when your plow is a pencil and you're 1,000 miles from the field.
Was there ever a crisis, a moment when the company teetered, or were there many?
There were crises in the early days, for sure. In fact, the McGregors were tramp sheep herders. My dad wanted me, as an historian, to call them itinerants, but they were called tramps in those days, so I used that term. They were pursued by the Northern Pacific Railroad, which found an obscure territorial law that made it illegal to graze sheep on unfenced land owned by others. And they were pursued with trespass suits, the allegation being that McGregor's and some of the other characters were insolvent, irresponsible, and unable to pay for damages, even if they were willing to, which your orator believes they are not. McGregor's fought prosperity all the way to the courthouse steps before finally signing Northern Pacific Grazing Lease Number 1. And within about 5 years, they had accumulated a great deal of land. Railroad attorneys deciding that the land was absolutely worthless out here, and so they acquired the cornerstone from which our ranch was built. We certainly had troubles in the Great Depression, too. My dad used to say that we were so far in debt with the bank, they didn't want to write it off because nobody wanted to see that size of loss. That could well have been true. During my working career and my dad's, dating back to the start of this company, we've remained strong as an organization because of those deeply held values. And we have a passion in challenging times to make a difference for farm families. So there have been challenging times, and we do everything we can in those times, knowing that the difference for the farmers we serve between profit and loss can be very limited, determined to make a difference.
So I was on the web looking at your leadership roster, and it appears that many of your top staff will be turning over soon. How have you been anticipating the changing of the guard?
We have had the good fortune of having dedicated long-term employees who've been with us for careers. We work to find talented young people to come in and learn the way and take on key assignments. And it takes a lot of time and energy to find those remarkable people, but we're always on the lookout for them. So we continue to have generational evolution over time, not only in our central management, but out in the field. The good news is twofold. We've had some outstanding people who now have neared some are now fully retired, and that's something they've very well deserved. But we have some really talented young people in many ways with skills broader than we, the generation before, had, young people to come in and fill those roles. That said, we have a challenge as agriculture to continue to recruit people. I serve as chair of the Rural Jobs Committee for the Association of Washington Business, and we're working to find ways to attract young people to our company, to be sure, but all the way across the field to farms, to various agricultural businesses, to rural communities. And we'll continue to make progress on that. A veteran colleague of mine, Ted Dierkop, put it well when he and his colleagues won the National Environmental Respect Award a few years ago. He said, a career in agriculture has to be the most wide-open, all-out job experience you can have if you have a passion for the outdoors. And indeed, agriculture is a great place to put down roots.
But do young people, millennials, want to move to the country to take these jobs?
Some do. Some need to be encouraged to do so. And I think continuing to reach out to people, not only people attending college, but people in high schools too, is an important process. I think the FFA programs are a key part of that, 4-H for those younger. And as a company, we've offered scholarships. We're now at 113 that we provided in the last 15 years to high school seniors going into further study in the field of agriculture, which we define pretty broadly, everything from diesel mechanic to vet school. And we continue to reach out to people. It used to be that young people would stay around rural communities and wait and find a job. Anymore, they don't do that. But they should, because agriculture is an exciting place to put down roots. My dad used to say, tongue only slightly in cheek, "Never through these doors shall a computer pass." I am not skilled in that world, but recognize their value. My son is very talented in that world, and if he could have a leisure day to do nothing but programming, would think that was living the high life. When you think of the change from driving tractor, pulling an implement with a big, heavy weight pulled by a chain that would drag along and show you where you'd been when you could peer through the dust, when you look at the change from that to precision agriculture, to satellite imaging, to drones. Change in MacGregor Company from "Never Through These Doors Shall a Computer Pass" to a precision agriculture division, to us owning an agricultural software business with 20 programmers. I think my dad would be somewhat chagrined at first and might grumble a little bit about how that'll just mean more people and more procedures and paperwork. But I think he'd be pleased too, because as he always said, you can't stand still in agriculture.
Alex, we have dozens of varieties for growers to choose from in the Northwest now. And the MacGregor Company goes and licenses a variety and introduces it into the marketplace. What was the decision-making like that went into your plunge into releasing that licensed variety?
We've been setting a fast pace for varietal research for a number of years. Research on usually a couple of dozen locations from the Horseheaven Hills to the foothills of the Bitterroots. And over the last 10, 12 years at our research station here as well. We're always looking for varieties that can make a difference. And Ampress, the variety that we have seen great promise in, has done very well in serving the specific needs of what to the rest of the world may look like a small area, but to us is a pretty crucial area. So 3 years worth of trials in our own work, superior results, a high-yielding variety that will serve not the whole Inland Northwest, but several counties with high-yield potential and the right recipe of growing degree days. When we find something that'll make a difference right here, we're on it. We like to take basic research from our land grant schools, with whom we've always had a great relationship. Ideas we get from seed and agribusiness companies. Take those basic ideas out to the field and see what works. When something works, we're going to get out there and promote it because we know it'll make a difference for farm families. If it doesn't work, we stay away from it. So Ampress works.
So is Ampress a one-off, or can we look forward to other licensed varieties from MacGregor's?
It's interesting. Kat Salois, the head of our research and technology group, had a lot of experience in the Corn Belt, and she talks about how there was a move there to finding varieties that would serve a certain niche, a certain district, and then labeling those. I think there's promise when you can have varieties specifically suited to an area. So when those come up, we will pursue them.
So now when I think of threats to the weed industry, two are at the top of my list. The first being chemical weed resistance, and the second being low soil pH. How is the industry going to overcome these challenges?
By doing sound long-term planning with the growers we serve, looking at rotation, modes of action, roadmaps for the next 5 years about what sequence of crops to be grown, working on three-year rotations to assist in battling chemical resistance. We have to manage carefully to make sure that we don't run out of options. And we do have enough in our toolbox, both with chemistry and different modes of action and farm practices, rotations. We do have enough so we can win the day, but it will take a lot of work and a lot of savvy, a lot of work on an individual farm basis to see what will be a good fit there.
Will you be introducing technology like the Weed Seeker? Because on the one hand, it applies less chemicals. On the other hand, you're a chemical outfit.
We're always looking for things that make a difference for farm families. It would be foolish for us not to try to find something that will produce the best value for those we serve. It wouldn't work. We'd find it repugnant to do that. We have to make a difference for the people we serve, and we're determined to do that. It takes a long time to build trust, and trust is so valuable. I think of a customer of ours who several years ago, our people had gotten to know and never done any business with us. I sensed that there was an issue that I wasn't aware of. And he told me that my grandpa had cut off his grandpa's credit at our Ranch General store in 1931. When I explained that we had no credit ourselves, that we were broke and just trying to get by, we got through that 70 years later. It takes a long time to build trust, and we have a passion for that trust and that collegial relationship with the people we serve. If technology comes along that helps us be more specific, that's a great thing. When I think of the progress in weed management, back to the days when we used gallons of product per acre to fractions of an ounce, so much headway has been made, and we're going to continue to do that.
I've already gone well over my allotted time. Remember, next week I'm posting episode 64, the second part of my interview with Alex McGregor, where you'll learn more about his passion for telling the story about farm families. Please join me again next week for episode 64, or what I'm calling Alex McGregor Counts His Blessings, continued, right here at Weed All About It.
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call weed. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.